And you are listening to 94.1 KPFA and 89.3 KPFB in Berkeley, 88.1 KFCF in Fresno, 97.5 K248BR in Santa Cruz, and online at kpfa.org. The time is 2 p.m. Stay tuned next for the Visionary Activist Show.
That you can hear me with the break music still going on. There we go. So we are here gathered, you know, invoking forgiveness through music, and we're about to welcome one and two wonderful guests. But it's perfect because the midheaven overhead, as we convene right now, there are images for each degree of the zodiac. The image overhead is the music of the spheres harmonizing the world. So more than perfectly, we dive into invoking forgiveness through music. We welcome Donatella Molisanti, gifted healer with a music conservatory degree in opera performance and teaching. And later in the hour, Dr. Fred Luskin, leading explorations into forgiveness therapy. So Donatella is the founder of Molisanti Whole Soul Healing Method, a six-step process that helps individuals access their core being, release the residue of trauma, and express themselves authentically. At the core of this work is the Molisanti Soul Singing Method, a music-based healing that fuses classical opera, sacred Eastern music, and improvised vocalization. And the Molisanti Conscious Breathing Method, a tool for awakening the body and becoming both spiritually aligned and emotionally grounded by mastering the breath. Through her wellness company, Vitality Soul, Donatella teaches these methods and additionally offers group programs, international retreats, and private sessions. To this end, she's been interviewed by top media worldwide, including Women's Health in the U.S. and Top Sente in the U.K., and has worked with A-list celebrities, Fortune 500 executives, elite athletes, everyday people, bringing her innovative work to those in need worldwide on a mission to help heal humanity one soul at a time. Her soul singing is Donatella's debut CD and reflects the culmination of 30 years of her work. Welcome, Donatella.
Welcome. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me, and thank you for amazing presentation.
Well, that's very kind of you. And then we'll be welcoming your colleague at quarter past the hour, Fred Luskin, PhD, senior consultant and health promotion at Stanford University, professor of the Institute of Transpersonal Psychology, and you both are coming to the Bay Area on April, I have it here, 24th and 25th, and we can tell people more about that. One is open to the public and one is just for Stanford students. So I listened to the beautiful higher heart that you sent and that we'll be playing for our wonderful dedicated audience. And it's so delightful that you're trained in opera, that you really can sing. That's so wonderful because we're full of, you know, I don't know, we're full of people who can't sing, you know, and New Age has low standards, but you're raising them. You're raising our standards. So you grew up in Sicily, surrounded by ancient healing, says your bio, yes?
Yes. Yeah, I have to say there is an amazing background that has helped me seeing the ability for everybody to sing, actually. And this is something that since my early 20s, when I started to teach singing and to really bring kids and adults in to discover their voices, the inner ability to master the perfect instrument that the body is, through the ability to manage the breath. And as we know, breath is a great releaser. and but also a great teacher. We have breath, it's at the base of all patterns of feelings and emotions, and we create different patterns with different experiences. So in a very surprising, actually, it was by chance that I healed myself when I started to study opera, because I was suffering very heavy pains every month with my period as a teenager. And when I started to sing and to apply the techniques of this ancient way of unique and ancient way of singing in Italy, that my pain went away. And I was really surprised. And so I started to dig into it and became... That thing had in common with the common knowledge of food combining and natural methodology that is still alive in Sicily even now, but even much more when I was young. And so I really start to sing and be fascinated by the ability of healing at the same time. So I applied this with my students. And I started to teach breathing to heal the vocal cords for professionals. And I've been ongoing curiosity, studying, testing on myself, testing on people I work with. It's really fascinating.
No, that's wonderful. And from a board op, all praise board ops, the backstage allies, many great conversations with them. And it was a board op conversation in which we were talking about forgiveness. And we said, we don't know what that is. We don't want to condone, right? We don't want to condone bad behavior. And then I said, all right, being a trickster, dedicated person, I said, all right, I'm redefining the word forgive as to mean to give energy for change. Because then who couldn't we forgive? We could forgive, maybe even Donald Trump. We could forgive ourselves for small things, for using a styrofoam cup, and large things as well. So in a way, that's what you're doing. You're giving energy for change to everyone who hears your beautiful work, yeah?
Yes. That's great. And I have to say that I work a lot in a spirit of finding right ideology and alignment with forgiveness. And what I find that my work aligns a lot with Dr. Fred Nakskin is because we both think that it's so important to take the person in a state of intimacy with oneself, in a state of calmness, in a state of the heart before it was hurt. You know, forgiveness, when we get hurt and we can't forgive, it's because we have been kicked out of ourselves. We have lost that part of ourselves that was hurt. And it's that belief that we are not the same anymore because of what happened to us. So when we bring people through music, through breathing, back inside, there is a chance that to see the possibility of letting go and a possibility of free oneself from the experience and from the person that hurt. So it's again, breathing is a huge releaser. It's a way to use music and breath to release, to let it go, to empty this beautiful environment that it's our aura, that it's our electrical body that, you know, goes and assimilates so much from the environment, from relationship, from ourselves, from our mind. And when we introduce music with this intention, we introduce the alignment of this electrical body. The brain really absorbs. So we are, our brain is made to absorb music. And to absorb music with this intention, it's very powerful. If you think of a singer that, you know, fills up an opera singer, fills up an entire theater, and everybody feels the voice in the bones, inside, it's really, the body is a perfect instrument. The body that produces a song or sound, the body that receives it. And so for the lower resonance, when we align to higher frequency, it's so easy that the body follows, much easier, much faster than the mind would do.
That's great. You know, and of course, you know, I love animals. Lived with a coyote for 19 years, and she didn't care much for humans, but she, I mean, she loved me, but not humans in general, but she did love humans making beautiful music. And she did like, you know, and pillows. She thought pillows were good too. So pillows and music were really what she thought, you know, humans were good for. And I have played the beautiful song that we're going to play in some moments. And my cats all came around going, ooh, they liked it. They like it. So and they like it for maybe for what it's bringing out in us, but also in them. And then, of course, these wonderful realms, you know, in which, you know, whales love music to and fro, not the insistent drum machine beat, doom, doom, doom. And I just also want to praise you for bringing beauty and standards to the world. I work at a lot of large festivals, and many great people are convening. And the music that is often all night from different stages is doom, 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 doom. And I go, no, the animals don't like this. We don't like this. This is, it's actually kind of obedience music because it's such an entraining, simple beat. So here you are bringing complexity, right? Complexity and beauty, yeah?
Yeah. And also complexity and the unexpected. So it really goes, activates the mind, activates the higher mind, activates the heart. And because it's not expecting, the listener is not able to expect what's coming after. Still, it's in harmony. That creates the space for healing, for the unknown, for the release, for the openness. Well, I love what you just said, because there are scientific researchers that showed that people, they set up a few kind of music, and what was mostly appreciated that people would go back to were the songs of the birds. Among, you know, even more than songs that reminded the, you know, love stories of the past or other people or situations, the songs of the birds were the one that were more effective on people's psyche. And the music I do goes a little bit on that dimension. It doesn't go in the beat that it's expecting, but in the amazing orchestra that we find in nature.
That's great. No, and you know, where we are, you know, the confluencing of all allies, I love to also say there is no prison for the unexpected, right? And to cultivate that, you know, anything that's expected, there's a little trap for it. But if it's unexpected, it liberates everything. And so I love that.
Yeah, exactly.
And the songs of the birds, you know, some years past hosted author on how insects taught humans jazz, right? And you know, and have also hosted many our wonderful Michael Stocker, marine acoustician, with the songs of the, you know, of the whales and the ocean sounds as well. And we go, right. So all of this, you know, and the primary metaphor, and when we play your music in moments, you know, to feel our heart, you know, that humans may once again rejoin, you know, the choreography and the harmony of creation going on all around us, this listening. So is this a good time to play your beautiful song, you think?
Of course. Thank you.
That's great. Okay, so let's play. Erica has it queued up, the little intro, and then into the beautiful 6-ish minute song. And I would encourage everybody, if you're driving, pull over, right? And wherever you are, just really be able to sink into this beauty and feel how Donatella is guiding us. And here we go.
Breathe in, relax. This song awakens and activates your higher heart, a chakra positioned between the heart chakra and throat chakra. It connects you with your divine self. It brings in a larger perspective of unconditional love and provides spiritual support. Tune into its vibration and allow it to transport you into an expanded dimension to clear your mind while grounding you into your heart chakra.
Oh.
we're gliding in from this beautiful music meditation of our guest, Donatella Moltisanti. And I love thinking of us wafting this out over the magic of radio, you know, and then out into, you know, live Bay Area and on into Los Angeles and on out to podcast. And we have listeners even in Syria, there we go, and unlikely places, and Japan, hello, you know, that we're wafting out, you know, that which will calm down our species amygdala, the portion of our personal and collective brain that scans for threat. We go calm down, and it's kind of like you know, the latest studies and the ancient studies of psilocybe mushrooms, that they that it calms the amygdala and catalyzes enhanced cooperation between the other regions of the brain. So we go, that's wonderful. So we're about to bring in your wonderful colleague who's joining us. Fred Luskin, PhD, is a senior consultant in health promotion at Stanford University, professor at the Institute of Transpersonal Psychology, the director of the Stanford Forgiveness Project. And just to clue him in, I put on the table one of my favorite verbal tricks to redefine forgive as to mean to give energy for change. There we go. He's in an ongoing series of workshops and research projects that investigate the effectiveness of his forgiveness methods on variety of populations. Dr. Luskin presents lectures, workshops, seminars, trainings. His work has helped those who suffered from the violence in Northern Ireland, Sierra Leone, World Trade Center, and additionally has been effective in corporate, medical, legal, and religious settings. He's been featured in many, many fantastic things, and now the Visionary Activist Show, his website, learningtoforgive.com. Welcome, Fred Luskin.
Hey, thank you.
That's great. So both of you are cahooting on April 24th and 25th in the Bay Area, for those lucky enough to be there. And the first event, which is open to the public, takes place on April 24th from 7 to 9 p.m. at Unity Church of Palo Alto in the Fireside Room. And the second event, which is only for Stanford University students, lucky old them, takes place on April 25th as part of the Music, Mind, and Human Behavior class taught by Professor Jonathan Berger. Yeah, further extol or animate that invitation, Fred Luskin, and how you and Donatella came to collaborate?
You know, let me just amplify before I do anything else what you were saying about the amygdala and calming it down.
Yeah.
It's a crucial piece of learning that, from what I can understand, the yogis and the Buddhists and the people who started quieting themselves down thousands of years ago, they came to understand that, one, you can't make good decisions if you're all aroused, upset, anxious, what all that stuff is, and the amygdala gets patterned very quickly. So in terms of what we're talking about forgiveness, if you've been hurt or bothered by somebody or disappointed and you position them as a threat to you, then just thinking about them, like, gets you upset, stimulates the amygdala. I mean, the amygdala is not the whole part of it, but it's a stand-in for a whole system of a kind of arousal that has to be quieted down before we can even think clearly.
Right. And you know, part of the dedication of this show, which you are just completely, perfectly welcome, is, you know, all of us aspiring and training to not be snookered into polarity, no, to spiral out of that thing, right? Because we strengthen whatever we oppose, and yeah, the perceived threat. And so, in your expanding charitable heart, do you imagine wafting, you know, the beauty that to which you're dedicated and to which Donatella is an embodied expressor, you know, even unto the White House? can you imagine calming that amygdala down?
I mean, I think a lot of us are trying to do work to heal the parts of our mind that are filled with division and discord and threat. And I thought her music was gorgeous. I mean, you can just feel how that opens up the listener to the parts of themselves that don't need an enemy and don't need to fight to be whole.
Beautiful.
And it's lovely.
It's lovely. And in fact, we can even, radio is such a great medium. We can imagine even, throwing into our collective, cauldron, the addiction to having an enemy, right? That would be good. Let's throw that one in. There we go. And, the spiraling dynamic, and the quality of arousal that we do want that's not toxic, the arousal to do something kind, the idea of rising altruism. But that's great. I was remarking on the beauty and training and so admiring the training, and feel free to jump in anytime you want, Donatella, of mm-hmm. your Donatella's voice going, oh, the opera, the redemption of opera syncretized with the healing singing traditions of the East. We love syncretizing, and you and your journey, I mean, we're all examining our journey now, but, from Sicily to ancient traditions to opera to nutrition to all of those. And, we love syncretizing. And I guess also, Dr. Fred, are you a great syncretizer? Take this from here and not that thing, and take this from over here and brew them together?
Well, one of the things that, interesting, but when I'm done with this phone call, I'm going on into a class at Stanford here to teach basically amygdala quieting.
Oh, that's great.
That we are, we have a class called Tools for a Meaningful Life. And a lot of it, I mean, we don't have that beautiful music, but we have other qualities to try to help people to, enter that same brain, neurological heart state where they want a beautiful life and a meaningful life.
And part of, the mythic news of now, we go, beauty and cruelty neck and neck. We're betting on beauty. Beauty is strong. And I think, Donatella, that's also what comes through in your voice, that you are animating and resonating, that beauty is powerful and strong. It's not a little frou-frou ornamental third section of the newspaper over here. It's like...
Exactly.
I love with... I'm sorry, say what? Yeah?
Yeah, beauty, it's really a principle that if we understand the importance of beauty around us, if you think about when somebody is ugly to you or say something that's not pleasant or offensive and just not polite, it is ugly. And there is that preservation of the beauty inside, the beauty of the soul, the spirit, and even the beauty of the voice. Really, what you said at the beginning, to uplift the standards, it's really to understand a level of the healing that there is a tonality that is a specific frequency that heals. And so we need to take time to find beauty in our voices, in our spirit, in our minds. And so when there's something that's discordant, that's really, it's bothering, it's throwing you off beauty. And so what we're doing in different ways is to bring back the balance into beauty and the importance of the alignment of our nervous system, our soul, our body, and our mind to the sense of beauty.
And I love the former art critic for the San Francisco Chronicle, Kenneth Baker, was something deep to his heart. He said, beauty is always available to the contemplative mind, right? So Dr. Fred, in your class, even though you don't yet have Donatella's beautiful voice, can you create an atmosphere of, contemplative mind, beauty there? Even though the siren is going off outside your door, that's very witty. We'll think of it as the wail of Persephone in the underworld. You're here to balance out the cacophony. But can you create an atmosphere of beauty in your classroom?
You know, there's a poem by Mary Oliver called Settlement. And she talks about, I mean, she's such a nature poet, but she talks about going outside into this, like, wonderful, beautiful, mysterious world, and that as she steps outside, the world is beautiful enough for her to let go of her grievances and forgive.
Mm-hmm.
And that's available to anybody. That besides beauty, there's also the quality of what we pay attention to, and we probably teach more about that. But you know, we remind students here again on this beautiful campus that you can walk around or bike around and be totally wrapped up in how much work you have to do or what you're going to do when you graduate, or you can notice you're on a beautiful campus. And depending on what you notice more and what you pay attention to, you can in some ways rewire the brain to be more open to beauty. That it's like the beauty is always around. It's whether or not we are safe enough in our mind and body to find it.
Right. No. There's an ancient mantra, the pattern on the trestle board, and statement six is puzzling, but I think you both can help us with it. It says, in all things great and small, we see the beauty of the divine expression. And it is an assignment, because there is much ugliness and terror and revenge and sadness in the world, but to be an agent of that. So can you work with that, Donatella and Fred? In all things great and small, we see the beauty of the divine expression. Is that a good thing from a couple thousand years ago that you like?
Yes, the one.
I'll just say very briefly that there are wisdom traditions all over the world that touch that wisdom. And what it's based on is a lot that the world is everything. This created universe is everything. It's ugly, it's horrible, it's unfair. It's also as exquisitely gorgeous and miraculous as could ever be imagined. It's the whole thing. It's the whole catastrophe.
Right. Exactly.
That's why you have beautiful music like this, because when you're stimulated to remember inside of yourself how much loveliness there is, first of all, you want more.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And a phrase that James Hillman and I kind of cooked up. We noted that the opposite of aesthetic is anesthetic. So either we have a living sense of beauty or we're asleep, right? Which means there's no solution to anything without beauty. You can't have a democracy without beauty because we're anesthetized. And so that really works well. And that's part of your dedication. And then just to honor Mary Oliver, whom I've many friends in common, worked with her once at a conference, really fun, because she's also like Masaru Emoto that you also referenced, Donatella. These are wonderful chain smoking people who go, no, we are not special, we are just, you are here with everybody. And they Dr. Masaru Emoto and Mary Oliver both chain smoke, and I find that adorable. But Donatella was bringing up the power of unexpected to liberate. And I do love one of Mary Oliver's, poems of praise in which she's praising everybody. And then at the end she goes, I sing in praise to the coyote that came at me with its strong teeth bared and then at the last moment smiled. Right? And we go, that's really great. Because you were doing how in the music that we just listened to, Donatella, the beautiful higher heart, I was wondering and then surrendering because you said it's unexpected because, well, we don't know where it's going. Is that part of what you meant?
Yes. Yeah, so basically, when you go through the CD, you see that it's almost a journey and takes you from releasing the unexpected in life. So the expected is always taken in a negative way. We want to be predictable, we want to be controlling, and because we're activated by fear. When you sit down and you have this sense of trust that you can go within and that there is no fear within, and it's unexpected, the fact that you can go and relax more and relax more and relax more. But the mind, the rational mind, is not engaged because it's not a rhythm that it's predictable. There's no melody that goes how you expect it goes. It comes in these spheres, in these frequencies that are inspired by higher frequencies I work with and I connect to after years and years of meditating on the higher heart level. And so it's a sound of the spheres, as you were saying, because it's something that it's not coming from necessarily a mathematical equation that, you know, comes from a law of the math in music. But it is there intrinsically. It's part of my background. It's something that makes me who I am. But also there is an unexpected, unknown energy that this frequency unfolds as I sing. Another aspect of unexpected is when there are like songs like Letting Go or the healing frequency. It really takes you to a journey. Not only relaxes you and opens the door for you to finally go inside and not be afraid and not be nervous and avoiding yourself. So you can really go and have this immediate unexpected easiness of being intimate with yourself, but also there are little dissonances here and there that trigger the dissonance inside, and you are facing it, you're loving it, you're embracing it, and then you're letting go. So the music is much more than just the music. It's an interaction that takes you in wondrous places within yourself, and so that's really unexpected.
That's great. And Fred, I know we're going to release you to go we have 7 minutes or 6 minutes, there we go, to release you to go calm your students down, calm their amygdalas down, your class on calming down the amygdala, which is wonderful. But the implications. Yes?
Let me just say one thing too.
Please.
Kind of amplify what you've been both saying just from the language that I have. When any of us are in the midst of beauty, so in nature, music, art, love, in anything, our nervous system and our physical indicators are in harmony. So there becomes a synchronization between brain waves and heart rates and muscle tension. Like there's a harmony to the body, because we're safe and we're at peace and we're where we want to be, and those states are actually physically healing. But when we're threatened or angry or bitter or any of those things, that disharmony is reflected in physical indicators as well. You know, blood pressure goes up and muscle tension goes up and all sorts of things alter. And so what I'm trying to say is that we have this full mind-body response to beauty. There's even some studies that have shown that, like, a run in a city street certainly has value, but it has a deeper effect when it's a run in nature. There was even a small study, I think, that hinted at doing yoga in nature had more, slightly more effect than doing yoga in a city. And it's not telling everybody to move to nature, but what it's saying is that as much as we have an amygdala that is designed to trigger us whenever anything reminds us of a threat or a past wound, we have other parts of us that are wired to just, like, relax and absorb the beauties of this world, the goodness of this world, and, you know, they all resonate in some level with a kind of frequency of love, you know, that there's that we're also pulled to that.
Right. You know, and everything is teaching us. There was a study done, certain science, New York Times science section on particularly dominant species of monkeys, or the bull primate. And so they kept adding more dominant males in. And what happened was they competed. At a certain point, half of the males bailed out. Said, no, we notice the women, the female monkeys are over here making art and beauty and pleasure and sex. We're going over there. We're going Jamaican, right? And the rest of the monkeys all died. They all died of heart attack, high blood pressure, or they killed each other. So dominance is an evolutionary dead end, right? It just says that over and over again. And, you know, and the beauty to which you all are dedicated, and in the last moments before you go and calm down the amygdala of your students at Stanford, you do mention your work. You've worked with people who've been suffering from violence in Northern Ireland and Sierra Leone and the World Trade Center and so on. Any prospect of the Middle East?
I've done small talks with people from the Middle East, but never a project. The reason we chose Sierra Leone and the World Trade Center and Northern Ireland to do projects is, like, the war was over.
Right.
And it would have been too challenging to come in and talk about forgiveness while people were still an active threat. And so we went to Northern Ireland right about the time that the peace process was getting started. We did stuff at the World Trade Center a couple of years after the attack, and the Sierra Leone violence was a number of years in the rearview mirror. And let me just finish my little piece with this about forgiveness is, like, none of this is to say that beautiful music or any of life's goodnesses will totally in any way eradicate how scary life can be. Nor are they sufficient right away in the midst of a trauma. So, you know, if your kid is killed, you're going to be a mess for a couple of years. That's just true. The thing that changes and is so hopeful for human beings is over time, if one grieves and allows the sadness and the loss to be faced, then over time we can open back up, even in the midst of tragedy, to life's beauty and goodness, of which music and relationship and good food are all a part. And the shame for all of us human beings is we often don't do that, that we hold on tight to our grudges and grievances so we don't open back up, and then we pass them on to our children and our grandchildren and our neighbors. And so in that way, in the same way that you talked about dominance as being some kind of dead end, so is our normal, like, tight holding on to our sense of victims, is the same kind of, in my estimation, misuse of a really important part of the process, but that is designed to be relinquished at some point. And, you know, it's not just to say that it's so simple that if you always listen to beautiful things or look at beautiful things, painful things aren't happen. And if painful things have happened in short, you know, proximity to your time, then beauty alone will not heal you. But it's just such an important reminder that there's beauty everywhere. And if we're using our woundedness to deny it, then we're hurting ourselves and the people around us. And that's, like, the takeaway, pretty much what we've gotten teaching forgiveness all these years. And, you know, anyway, I do got to go teach. I thank you very much for me on. And Donatella, I look forward to seeing you soon.
Wonderful.
Yes. Looking forward to seeing you. Thank you.
So thank you so much. And you go calm down the amygdalas of the world, Dr. Fred Luskin. That's a wonderful calm. Easy, because grief is a terrible beauty of kinship. Thank you so much for honoring beauty and grief and taking it into the university. Makes it look like an attractive place. Going, that's good. Anyway, thank you so much. Oh, there he's off. All right, so we have our precious time remaining to us. So much in what you're both dedicated to, but there's another radio guest, Martin Prechtel, I often have, who says when he came back to this country after 25 years in Guatemala, he said he'd forgotten that Americans know so little about grieving, and he said for lack of grief we go to war. And grief has been often, like after 9/11, kidnapped into polarity. But I wanted to just direct us to the Parkland youth rising up who say pain has made us family, and we've turned our grief into action dedicated to collective well-being. And that's a pretty great miracle, right?
Yes. Yes. I also want to say something about, add something about what Dr. Fred Luskin was saying, that there is an overall forgetfulness about the joy and beauty in life. So there is often an attitude of not letting go. If somebody bounces you in the street or somebody is distracted, and we collect this lack of forgiveness of people don't even know, like people in the street when we drive. There's an overall attachment to be resentful to the world, to people around, without understanding what it is that we are doing. And going back to beauty and to nature, like what I was going to say, I really like to take an inner breath with my mind, it connects to a flower, and just really lose myself in that beauty, in that amazing, mesmerizing, overwhelming beauty that a flower gives. But also there is that gentleness that comes in my heart, and so I can be forgiveness. I can use forgiveness with a taxi driver that's not being that stressed out, or with somebody that, it's not polite, but my nature doesn't have to change because something around me is in a state of stress or ugliness. So this is a reminder that we need to choose the state we live, the state we perceive life, because what we perceive, we really give back. And so we allow that forgetfulness of beauty and serenity to change our to nature, our very nature. So I think that it's going back to that principle. And in spite of our lifestyles and how busy and how stressful can be, it must be a possibility to choose which frequency you hold your space.
Yes, and when you went to music conservatory and got your degree as an opera performer, and I love what you're doing with it and syncretizing it with so much beauty. But did you perform as an opera singer? Was that part of your journey?
Yes, I still perform. Yes.
Oh, look, and your dog agrees.
Yes.
That's good. No,
I perform.
Yeah. Yes.
I perform in the mainly in the sacred music, and also I perform with the Cecil Chorus of New York at the Carnegie Hall yearly. And in different cathedrals, I perform in Europe.
Go on. Yeah.
Oh, I was just saying, I like to, there is so much intensity in our classical composers, Mozart and Haydn, Handel. It's just something that I can never give up. There is some intrinsic poetry and a world that really takes people immediately, it takes me immediately in a very in a magical state.
And do you know, by any chance, do you know the piece Four Last Songs by Richard Strauss? It's the four last pieces of music Richard Strauss wrote before he died. And it's the words are the four last poems that Hermann Hesse wrote before he died. Do you know that piece?
I'm not.
Oh no! Anyway, that's okay. And anyway, I just want to waft it out to our team that you might love it. You know, we love To and Fro. It's called Four Last Songs. It just because it is so beautiful, and I had older siblings who turned me onto it. And when I would play it, I would think this is the kind of music that would enchant animals. It's so beautiful. So I just put that maybe for something you want to explore. And then another thing, just in your unfolding beautiful repertoire, there's a wonderful children's book called Witch Witch by Eva Ibbotson, and it's about a young girl witch who heals by singing praise. And she sings customized praise. Somebody has trod on a very important worm, right? And so she gently cradles the worm in her hand and sings to it about wormy things, the beautifulness of dark, slippery places, and somebody injures their hand and she gently holds it and sings to it about the cleverness of five. And anyway, so I love that, you are, part of a long tradition and also innovating, taking old things and bringing them alive in a new way. But this tradition in literature and children's books and, healing music and going all the way back into the East that you... That you're so connected to. So, in our cahooting now, and then furthermore, it's like, ooh, there's so many people I want to know about your work, and there's so many people that I want you to know about their work, who are interested in transforming ugliness into beauty. I'm thinking of wonderful frequent guest Lily Ye, who goes to difficult places to draw out of the community beauty. She's doing visual, but you have this other crucial piece of the puzzle, and certainly that's also but part of the work that you'll be presenting on April 24th and 25th is do you teach humans how to chorus again, how to sing together again?
Yes, and one thing that I want to add is that I work a lot with mothers. And I'm preparing also my next CD is a collection of lullabies and also how to improvise lullabies, how to create consciously a welcoming place and a connection with the heart. And really, lullabies are so healing for adults, because we all have to nurture the inner child. And there's also one lullaby in this CD that just came out. But, the effect was so powerful with the group of mothers I work with, and to really teach them the importance and to use music to create an atmosphere, to use colors, to use candles, to create, always teaching, showing them how important it is for the children to come back home and find a beautiful place, a welcoming place, music running in the house, something that calms them, grounds them, teaches them at the same time. So, it's something that I think that teaching matters. We prepare we transform the world, actually. So I think that's where I go in my direction. I really, it's for everybody, and specifically to inspire mothers to incorporate this in their everyday life.
That's great. No, that's wonderful. And we would, just reciprocal blessing, we would then say, may your work, Donatella Moltisanti, and again, your beautiful website, DonatellaMoltisanti.com, may your work go forth to all who will find it heartening, which is probably a pretty vast audience. And I love what you were saying about lullabies. Another friend says, anything that reawakens the innocent dignity of our child heart, right? The music to reawaken the innocent dignity of our child heart within everyone. And And I want to go back to just in our last moments here, just to the quality you said of unexpected. And Martin Prechtel talks about, you know, a love drive-by. You know, everything that's toxic, do a beautiful version of it. And he says that's where you drive by, you run up to somebody, and you sing them a lullaby and give them a piece of chocolate and keep going. And we go, right. It's a kind of charming idea of the, you know, the there's the dangerous love drive-by, and then there's the positive drive-by. There's the, you know, negative sleeper cell, and then the positive sleeper cell of so much, you know, Parkland youth and all of us kind of rising up, and we go, we love that. But, yeah, and let me remind our audience that Donatella is coming to the Bay Area, where she will be collaborating with Dr. Fred Luskin, whom we just heard from. And the first event is open to the public on April 24th from 7 to 9 p.m. at Unity Church of Palo Alto. You can figure out where that is in the Fireside Room on Middlefield Road. And the second event is open only to Stanford University students on April 25th as part of the Music, Mind, and Human Behavior class. So that's fabulous. And I love just the little bit description. So you're going to have Dr. Luskin present some things, and then you will be guiding people, experiential part of the event, guiding participants through your Multisanti soul singing program, right?
Correct, yes.
Yeah, so yes, guided meditation with operatic vocalization. And before I let you go, also, you do say that anyone can learn or relearn how to sing. Is that part of your ardency?
Yes. Oh, yeah. This is really something I believe profoundly. Too much of our original self has been shut down by this idea that you are chosen and you are not chosen, you cannot. The truth is that, you know, when you have a child or somebody that wants to sing or wants to express themselves, you need to understand where they come from, and you need to be very clear where you want to help them to go to, and doesn't matter the effort or how long it takes, but everybody can get there. And music, the healing of music does that, because what happened is that, talking about singing, when there is a blockages, especially when there's a difficult partum or the early child traumas, it really
we're on our way out all too soon. We're on our way out all too soon. Our wonderful guest, Donatella Multisanti, DonatellaMultisanti.com, and hello to or goodbye to Fred Luskin, off calming down the amygdala of Stanford University students and therefore the world. Thank you so much, Donatella.
You're very welcome. And
that's great. Thank you, Erica Bridgman, Board Up. I'm Caroline Casey. We will reconvene next week. Thank you, team, CoyoteNetworkNews.com, for all kinds of ways to play. Woof.
Why should the black man in America concern himself, since we've been away from the African continent for 400 years, 300 or 400 years? Why should we concern ourselves? What impact does what happened to them have upon us? Number one.
For news, information, and analysis about Africa and the African diaspora, tune in weekly on Mondays at 7 p.m. to Africa Today with your host, Walter Turner. Africa Today is your source for being up to date on Africa and African. Mondays at 7 p.m. Africa Today on your Pacifica radio station, KPFA 94.1 FM.
You already know, right? That Yanis Varoufakis, former finance minister of Greece, is the co-founder of a global grassroots movement to revive democracy. He's also the author of several outstanding books, including Talking to My Daughter About the Economy and the new blistering expose, Adults in the Room, My Battle with the European and American Deep Establishment. Both Noam Chomsky and Slavoj Žižek praise him highly. Many consider Varoufakis, this leather-jacketed motorcycling rebel who openly opposes the international corporate class, to be the most interesting man in the world. Are they right? Find out Wednesday evening, May 16 at 7:30, when he'll be at First Congregational Church, 2345 Channing Way in Berkeley. This KPFA benefit, wheelchair accessible, will be hosted by the excellent Steve Wasserman of Heyday Books. Tickets at indie bookstores and online at brownpapertickets.com. For